Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it's Friday, so you know what that means. Time for the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan calling you. How are you doing, man? I realize, you know, you and I are both married guys. I never told you about when I was courting Susan, my wife. You know, she said she wouldn't marry me unless I got over my ambulance obsession. Well, I couldn't wait to get down on one knee. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
I'm not sure if I get that one, but thanks to Duff for calling it in like he does every Friday. A great musician, a great guy, and a not bad jokester. But speaking of great musicians, we have the Killer Queens, who are going to be rocking Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea Part Deux next week, setting sail January 20th. They are here on Talk is Jericho, the world's only all-female Queen cover band. And if you aren't going on the cruise, you still have to check them out. They're constantly out playing shows. You can see all their dates and ticket info on their website at thekillerqueens.com or follow them on Instagram at thekillerqueens. Anyway, today we've got singer Nina Noir, guitarist Emily Ruvidich, and keyboard player Olivia, and they're going to tell us how the band got started, how they put together their set list, which Queen songs are the hardest to play and sing, and which are their favorites. Nina's also talking about meeting Brian May and Roger Taylor and going to the London premiere for the Bohemian Rhapsody movie and meeting Rami Malek. Lots of great stories, lots of Queen today as the Killer Queens rock. Talk is Jericho now. So, last year on the Chris Jericho cruise, I decided I wanted to have a female tribute band on because there's so many great ones. And I had Shoot to Thrill, AC/DC band. They were great. So this year when I was looking for the next kind of version, Killer Queens was brought up to my attention through Emily because we jammed together. And then I saw that you are now in the Killer Queens. So I have Emily and I have Nina and I have Olivia. And you guys are on the cruise. It's going to be awesome.
Yay. Can't wait.
Like to be a female Queen band. Like that's a pretty cool. Are you the only one?
We are the only one in the world.
Yes. In the whole world?
In the whole world.
Wow.
Yeah, hopefully that lasts for a while. But we'll see.
Did you start this a few years ago?
7 years ago.
So it must have been huge for you when Bohemian Rhapsody came out and Queen became kind of the hot band again.
Yes. I've actually been following the pre-production of that movie for the last 5 years.
Really?
Yes. So I got to like kind of see them figuring out who they were going to have as Freddie Mercury and then like the perils that they had with the original guy that they had hired, and then they finally found Rami, and he's amazing.
Because the original guy was Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah. Oh.
And why didn't he...
So they actually, as best as I know the story goes, they got in a disagreement as to how to portray Freddie. Sasha wanted to portray him in the raw, more, this is the true Freddie. And Brian May and Roger Taylor wanted to kind of, you know, Disney-fy it, a little Hollywood it, you know, they kind of made it a little less
They didn't want
edgy.
It to all be sex, drugs, and rock and roll, yeah. Which is what Sasha wanted it to be, right?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So they fought quite a bit, and then he left the project.
Gotcha. Well, it worked out good for everybody involved, including you guys. Did you see an increase in your gigs and your
Absolutely.
Focus?
Yeah. Oh, everybody's queen crazy right now, which is great.
Right.
And we actually got to play the premiere. So we got to meet Rami Malek and the guys who played Queen in the film in San Francisco. They played at the Castro Theater and had us play before they showed the film. And they did a big like meet and greet, answered questions with the guys who played Queen in the film. And then they invited me to come to Wembley Stadium to walk the red carpet for the actual premiere in London with the whole cast of the film. So I got to stand on the red carpet and talk to everybody who was in the film, which was
That's amazing.
So
and crazy. Why did they invite you?
Because they like me. I don't know. The whole time I was there, I was like, why am I here? I didn't do anything to be here, but...
But were you kind of like, this is from the Killer Queens, the world's only female Queen tribute band?
Well, so Brian May's manager actually was the one who reached out to me and asked if I wanted to come after seeing that we'd played the premiere in San Francisco. So
were any of the guys there, Queen?
Yes. Yeah. Brian May and Roger Taylor were both there. I got to meet both of them.
Brian's the nicest guy.
He is the nicest guy. Yeah. Oh, my God. I couldn't believe it. I barely said one word. I was so terrified.
I hosted the Classic Rock Awards in London a few years ago. And both Jimmy Page and Brian May were in the crowd. So I was like, I better go introduce myself. Because there's a lot of people, like Lemmy's there. I've known Lemmy for years and Bruce Dickinson and those type of guys. But I better go like introduce myself to these guys so they know who the hell I am when I'm hosting. Jimmy Page was cool, cordial. But Brian was like just like the warmest, nicest guy that I actually talked to for like 10, 15 minutes. And had a great, him and his wife. His wife is like... super attractive 70-year-old lady. Like, it was just like really.
She's so adorable.
Yeah. Just a good, you could tell like Jimmy was a rock star, but Brian was like a genuine nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, how did you guys all get involved in this? I mean, to put together a Queen tribute band, as you guys know, not exactly the easiest music to play. And you're a five piece with a keyboard player. Liv is a keyboard.
Yes. We recently turned into a five piece about 4 years ago. So in the beginning of the project, I used to play and sing, but it's hard to rock the crowd when you're sitting behind the piano. So I quickly was like, I kind of want to just stay in front of the crowd.
And not to mention Queen has so much instrumentation and you really need that keyboard, you know, synthesizer background or you're just going to be playing to a bunch of tracks.
Well, so Queen actually has an unofficial fifth member, which is Spike Edney.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason that they have him and he plays guitar and keys.
Mm.
And Olivia plays guitar and keys.
So back up. So how did you get involved with the band, Olivia?
Well, I joined pretty recently. I think August was when I joined. So, you know, Nina had sort of her setup of what the keys player would do, but she hadn't had guitar before, which was a fun learning experience together. But I found you guys, I think you guys were transitioning keyboard players, and so I sort of just like was in the right place at the right time and auditioned. So yeah, I don't know,
And she's a dream come true because she plays guitar and keys.
It's perfect.
We haven't found that before.
I was laughing when you said transitioning keyboard players. In this day and age, that might mean something different, right? Especially with Queen. And how about you, Emily? Because when I met you, we did a gig with through Nita Strauss with the Starbreakers at the Whiskey.
Yes.
And you were on bass.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So how did you get involved with the Queens?
I think like a year and a half ago. I think just mutual friends, like on social media, they just reached out to me, and I was very scared because the Queen songs were like above my level. There were many tears, but learning all of them finally made me like a much stronger player because of it.
So are you a guitar player by trade then?
My first instrument is piano, and then I started guitar like right when I moved to LA, so like a couple years ago.
And then for Starbreakers, because Nita and then it was Courtney, right?
Nita and Courtney. Like, yeah, I can't compete with them. So I was like, I'll play bass.
Yeah. And we'll talk about Starbreakers because it was a cool experience to talk about Jill as well. But I guess to go back to when you guys started this, or you started, Nina, what made you decide to start a Queen tribute band, especially as a female Queen tribute band?
Well, so I have always been trying to get more involved in rock and metal. That's my heart and soul. And being a female singer, it's challenging to get into those projects. They tend to want male singers. Mm-hmm. So although I felt like I could sing circles around the guys that were auditioning around me, they would get the gig and I wouldn't. And I finally got frustrated and just said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to make an all-female band. You guys can't be involved in this one.
Yeah.
And I wanted to pick a project that would be very versatile. So it wouldn't just be rock or wouldn't just be metal or wouldn't just be one thing. And Queen is that. Queen is every style of music under the sun. And then, of course, Freddie Mercury is probably the single most easiest, I guess to say, singer to make female. Mm. He's very flamboyant and he's very crazy and he's over the top with his costumes and all the glam stuff. It was just, it was like, oh, I could easily take this and do a female spin on it. And it's not that outrageous. Mm-hmm. I mean, he even dresses in drag for
I Want to Break Free.
I Want to Break Free. So it was kind of like, oh, this is the one. This is the perfect one to kind of have that flair on stage and not feel like I'm overly, you know, doing the part. I wanted to have a little bit of myself involved in the project as well, not just
Freddie. It's interesting because I think it's one of the reasons why. Have you guys seen Queen with Adam Lambert?
Yes.
Okay, so he does such a great job, obviously vocally, but I said this in the most respectful of ways. He really nails it because he's gay also. He has that side to him. He has that feminine, like he can do Killer Queen and lie on the couch and it's like, yep, that's what Freddie would do. So I see what you're saying as a female. You would be more adept to doing that than if I was singing it, which would be another vibe as well. But you have the flamboyance and the feminine side too.
Yeah, it works out nicely.
Right.
And the range fits my voice perfectly. So it was easy to kind of just start learning the songs. I say that lightly. It was not super easy to learn these songs.
Yeah.
Queen has taught me a lot about my own voice and how to tour night after night and not blow my vocal cords out, because there's a lot of times where you get so into a song with the crowd and you just start putting a little extra into it and pretty soon you're like, oops, that was too much.
Freddie did such range and just amazing vibrato. It's not, you know, you might be able to hit the notes, but to nail those songs, do you sing them with Freddie's style in mind or do you sing them as Nina's style?
Well, I do both. So there are some parts of songs that I try and get as much of the Freddie flair as I can into the song. And then there are parts where I just go, you know, I'm never going to sound quite like Freddie. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to happen. So I put a lot of myself into it as well.
Olivia, when you're talking about being a musician and you say play guitar and keyboards, are you from LA?
I'm from New York.
So did you come to LA to find your fame and fortune as a musician?
Well, I came here for school and then I've just sort of stuck around. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of on accident. I didn't want to come here originally for school, but that's how it ended up. And so I'm so glad I'm here, you know, because I didn't even know what was here. And now I'm like, it's like a blast, you know?
Right, sure. Because once again, to be a female, like you mentioned, it's kind of, it's not a male-dominated, but female bands per se. I mean, I can't think of any all-female bands since like, what, L7 maybe? I mean, you got the Donnas, go back to the Go-Go's and the Bangles and those sort of things. But in this day and age, I don't know any female bands. Is there any that are all?
That are originals? I mean, there's like, gosh. Beyonce has an all-female band.
Okay, Destiny's Child is one, yeah, right? Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. It's not something that happens every day, you know? Yeah. It's like, and for you, Emily, have you played in bands with guys or has it mostly been all-girl bands?
I've played in 4 different bands with guys. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of split pretty evenly.
On guitar?
Bass for 3 and then guitar for one of those.
And that's one reason why I love what Nita's doing with Alice Cooper, in that she's a killer player, obviously, but she fits in. It's perfect for that band. You got the hot blonde chick who can just shred, throw down. It reminds me of Michael Jackson used to do that with Jennifer Batten, you know, it's kind of a cool vibe to have that in a band when you have the female killer player in there too. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, and her stage presence is amazing. She's so much fun to watch.
Yeah, she really is. She really is. When you started the Queen Project, is it just you that's left? Or do you have anybody else?
Yeah, no, we've gone through so many different versions of the project. It's pretty much all new girls.
Right. It's hard to find. It must be hard to find girls with the look and the ability to play.
It is. It's difficult to find girls who fit every part of the project that we need. And then it's also hard to keep them.
Right.
Because once people start seeing them play, they're like, oh, they're amazing. And the offers start rolling in. And then they're like, oh, you know what? I think I'm going to go do this other thing. And I'm like, all right, that's all good. I totally get it. Like,
have you lost players to that before?
Yes. Yeah. And I've had players that go like, it's okay. I'm just going to disappear for about 2 years, but just hold still. Don't get another player. I'll be back.
Yeah, and it's like, no.
That's not how it works. So
how many shows do you guys do, like, let's say in a month?
It varies. It varies all the time. So sometimes we'll only have 1 show a month. Sometimes we'll have 8 shows in a month. It just kind of goes back and forth between what we're doing and what the season is. Mm-hmm. You know how it's an ebb and flow.
Offers and stuff. Is it mostly in California? Is it all across the states?
So we've played, we've played in about 7 states so far. I'm trying to get some more, mm-hmm. obviously. But yeah, we've played out in Boston. We've done Colorado, Nevada, Utah, California. We're going to be playing in Pennsylvania, Florida.
That's great, though. Like, when you have, I mean, it's a Queen tribute band, so I mean, you'd have to find the right areas for that, but to be able to do that,
it's more just getting the word out. I mean, more than anything, like, we had a booking agent for the last 5 years that I was told was the best booking agent in the area that I am in. I'm in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one right now in the band that's not in Los Angeles,
right?
And they were like, this is the guy, and then he wasn't really doing a lot for us after the film came out. He got us to play the premiere, which was amazing, and then after that, all the other Queen tributes were like booking like crazy, and we only had one show on the books. So I learned that he wasn't really right for us, mm-hmm. and I fired him in March.
Yeah, and he didn't want you on the cruise either.
He didn't.
We had to go right through. I got your contact through Emily, and then booking agent, we had to go around. I was like, let's just talk to Nina directly. Because right? I think I said, we're not getting any response.
He was like, I don't think you want to do this, but they really want to talk to you, so here you go. And I was like, this is an amazing opportunity. What are you talking about?
Right.
So that was the first show that I booked without him. And then it just, I mean, thanks to you, it sparked my ability to just go, you know what? I can do this.
Do it yourself, right?
Yeah.
When you guys show up, what are the crowds? How do they react? Do you ever get is there male chauvinist types? Is everybody just going crazy for you? Tell us a little bit about that.
So my experience has been that people put the bar pretty low when they think, oh, okay, all female Queen tribute, what's this really going to be? So there's a lot of arms crossed and, just slanted eyes going, mm-hmm. And so when we do actually play and crush it, they're blown away, which it's helpful for us because they start with low expectations and then we just knock it out of the park.
It's always good to have low expectations. I've made a career off low expectations. How about you, Olivia? What was your first gig with the Queens like?
What was it? We played a fair. That was so fun. Well, actually, it was crazy because it was a 3-hour set, which Nina was like, we never do ever. It was the deepest cuts possible.
Oh, my gosh.
Immediately, I was like, I now know every Queen song. Okay.
Almost.
After that. Not even close, honestly, but... But I was like, oh, okay, this. And then it was finding synth patches for it and stuff. So I was really immersed immediately, which was really fun. But,
who's booking you for a 3-hour Queen show
crazy.
At a fair? Kind of a fair was it?
So this was a venue that they basically want to see how well you can rock the crowd. So they give you a long time slot at first. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of shorten it down when you become the headliner of that event.
Oh, gotcha.
But honestly, it was so much fun. For me personally, because I don't get to do all of the Queen songs mm-hmm. in a row like that. And we got to add in some new ones. And I was having so much fun playing with the audience mm-hmm. and not feeling as much of a time pressure.
Where are you from, Emily?
I'm from the middle of nowhere, North Carolina.
Okay. What's the name of it?
Jordan Lake.
Jordan Lake. How did you end up coming to L.A.?
I came out here for the bachelor program at MI for a guitar performance. And then didn't really like that. And then so just started doing my own thing, getting gigs. And then now I study astrophysics. So
astrophysics?
Yeah.
Man, it's perfect that you're in a Queen tribute band. Isn't Brian Mays an astronomer or something?
Yes,
astrologist or something?
He is a doctor.
Astrophysics?
Dr. Yeah. Brian May.
That's crazy. Did you ever hear the Jeff Baxter, the guy, the Skunk Baxter was in the Doobie Brothers and he was in Steely Dan? That he's actually a rocket scientist.
Really?
You watch these 70s shows, he's just going nuts. He's playing guitar on all the great Doobie Brothers tunes, and now he's an actual rocket scientist with a big walrus mustache.
That's
something. Some about your guitar players and physics. Yeah.
They're
right?
Brilliant.
When you guys are touring, do you all travel together? Obviously, a lot of fly dates.
Yes, we do.
What's
lots
it like
of fly
being
dates.
Five girls in a rock and roll band, touring around, traveling together?
Well, the one thing I noticed right away from playing with boys is that girls just smell so much nicer.
Yeah, that's true. Get on a tour bus after a week and a half and it's just like, ooh. We just did a tour and we have, I think we have, is it 12 bunks on it? And one of them, we have one are like my PA, and she runs the VIP and does a million other things. She's like, oh yeah, you guys just stink. Like, no one notices it but you. It's like, I'm a girl.
Hey, that's okay. When I toured with Queensryche, it was the same thing. It's just how it goes.
That's right. Yeah, you toured with Queensryche too. Yeah. That's amazing.
Same kind of bus. It was 16-person bus, actually, but they had like separate bunks that they built themselves in the back of the bus to fit more people.
Oh my gosh. So is this the Queensryche, the Jeff Tate Queensryche?
Yes.
So mm-hmm. Who was in the band?
So at the time we had, let's see, Simon Wright, Rudy Sarzo, and his brother Robert Sarzo.
Rudy's awesome.
We had Randy Gain, and I'm missing somebody in this lineup. I was just
Kelly
recently.
Kelly something or other?
Yes, Kelly Gray.
Yeah, Kelly Gray, that's right.
Yeah.
So were you Sister Mary?
I was.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
How was that, hanging out for the whole show just for one song?
Okay, so this was an interesting event. So they called me up with 2 weeks' notice asking if I wanted to be on the tour. And I didn't know anything about Queensryche. I didn't know anything about any of the band or any of the members. I just showed up for the first show with no rehearsal. Jeff looks at me and goes, oh, by the way, we changed the key. And I was like, oh my God, okay, what?
Did you know the song?
I did know the song. I studied it on my own, but I hadn't played it with the band yet. And so it was trippy to go out on stage for 10 minutes. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I walked out on stage, the audience would cheer so loudly because they were not expecting there to be a girl.
Mm.
They, I guess, would often tour and just play the recording and like have a video showing her singing and stuff. And Pamela Moore is an incredible singer.
Oh, so yeah.
Big shoes to fill.
Right.
But yeah, I walk out on stage, haven't even opened my mouth, and the crowd's like screaming their heads off. I was like, this is amazing.
It's a famous part in Queensryche lore. Like, that's one of the most recognizable parts in any of their songs.
Yeah.
Because they have somebody else to know. We were on tour last year in Germany, and they were playing a festival. Some other black-haired, raven-haired girl was singing.
Yeah.
You know, once again, just hang out for
was
one part.
Was this with Jeff or was this with?
It was Jeff.
Oh, okay.
But he had kind of a rent-a-band now.
I think that was his daughter.
I think it might have been too.
Yeah.
She's a pretty girl. But yeah, it was because it was like a bunch of musicians that looked like hobbits. So I don't think they were actual band. I was like, well, is that Frodo on guitar?
You know, when I was in the band, I learned a lot about the legalities of a project. And Jeff was sort of in the middle of fighting for the name. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know the backstory. So I got to learn pretty quickly, like, what was going on. And the fans were very vocal about it on all of my pages and YouTube and everything.
Right.
And yeah, they were at court just trying to fight for the name, and he lost, which is shocking because the new Queensryche doesn't have any of the original members.
There's one now? No, there's two, guitar player
and
bass
there?
Player. But he gained the right to do Mind Crime in its entirety.
Yes.
They can't do that.
Yes.
So that was kind of the split there, right? Because I think the name of the band was even Operation Minecraft
it
for
is.
A while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Talking about Queen, you mentioned there's other Queen tribute bands. Like, what are some of the other ones that are out there?
There's Queen Nation, which is here in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
Almost Queen, which is out in the East Coast. I think they're in New York. And there's A Night with Queen, which I think is from Texas.
So there's a few.
There's quite a few.
You guys ever run cross paths with them and have a rumble or anything?
I actually got to become good friends with Queen Nation.
Hmm.
They're very, very sweet guys. They invited me up on stage for my birthday. I happened to be at their show, and then they were like, oh, it's your birthday? Oh, come out and sing with us. So I did a duet on Tie Your Mother Down with them. It was so fun. It's so fun getting to watch Greg perform. He's an amazing entertainer.
So do the other queens, do they like try and look like Queen?
Yes. Gotcha. They look like Queen. They act like Queen. They try and sound like Queen.
Yeah.
We don't do that as much.
I wouldn't want to see you out there with a mustache.
Yeah.
Just being honest with you.
Sometimes it happens.
Does it? Really? Do tell.
She rocks it, though.
Oh, yeah? What makes you decide to put a mustache on?
Yeah, it depends on the venue. So sometimes during Another One Bites the Dust, I do a costume change, and I'll come out, and there's like a big drum solo that we do instead of all the synthy stuff in the middle of the song.
Oh, right.
And then when it comes back in with Another One Bites the Dust, I like put a mustache on and turn to the audience, and I just do that part, and then I pull it off again.
Oh, yeah, that's it? Yeah,
just a little, you know, nod to it.
A cute, funny little moment in the show.
Yeah.
People always laugh, too. They get a kick out of it.
Big reaction, right?
Yeah.
So you guys talking about playing so many different Queen songs, how long does it take to rehearse them? Because some of them are very intricate.
So we have limited rehearsals. So when I'm looking for girls, I always explain to them this is extremely challenging music. It's basically classical music disguised as rock. And we only have maybe one or two rehearsals before you're hitting the stage with us. So you better woodshed. And I go after people who are professionals, who are going to tell me whether or not they can actually do that. And then, yeah. Emily, what's it like for you to study all of this music?
Now I have, like, the songs down because I've been playing with you guys so long now. But learning the songs was, oh.
How long have you been playing with the Queens?
Year and a half, a year about.
So yeah. When you were learning them, what were some of the hardest ones to figure out?
Oh.
Because there's a certain tone to his guitar playing too, right?
And what's hard too is how he phrases stuff.
Interesting. How do you mean?
Like, it'll just be like phrase a certain way. So like the legato is in a certain part and then he'll like do like a little like staccato note and then just like you can't just play it straight through like with like sheet music. You have to like really listen to how he like.
What song is an example of that?
All of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All of them. Especially Bohemian Rhapsody, too. Like, I hear people play that solo a lot, and you can tell they just, like, were reading, like, the tab for it or something, and it's, like, you have to, like, really listen to, like, how he, like,
that's a great
plays
point.
It and how he, like, feels, like.
Well, Brian May has a very unique vibrato on the guitar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Every time I hear him play it, I'm like, I don't hear any other guitar players doing it like that. It's got a really interesting.
Because, like you said, with the tone of it. It's interesting. I remember when the Freddie Mercury tribute concert in 92, Def Leppard was playing and Brian May joined them, whatever song. I think it was Tie Your Mother Down. Mm. And he said, here he is, the man with the curly hair and the curly guitar lead. And that still, it's a curly, like you said, it's a very strange pull on tap off, you know. Even in songs like Crazy Little Thing Called Love, just those little licks that he plays in the second verse, not easy. Mm-mm. To do, but people think that it might be until you actually have to try it.
And they're all so precise, and his bends and everything are so, he'll just bend like a crazy amount, and it's just so precise every time that it's hard to even pick out when he's like doing a bend or when he's actually just playing that note.
Just playing a curly lead, yeah.
Yeah.
was there some songs that were harder than you expected them to be? Are they all pretty much hard?
One that I thought would be hard, but actually, surprisingly, is one of the easiest ones for me is Stone Cold Crazy.
Oh, okay.
That one has that hard little walk-up, but that's kind of the flip one. I thought that one. I was, like, saving that one, like, already about to cry over it.
Right.
And then that one was surprisingly, like, it's more straightforward, like, rock than the others.
How about you, Olivia? Which songs were harder to figure out?
I think the hardest part about learning them is like switching your hat to being, because the progressions are like stylistically different. So he has like jazz tunes, basically. Like Melancholy Blues is one of the like deep cuts we learned. But also, what's the other? Good Old Fashioned Lover Boy is like a jazz song, basically. And then,
wow.
So it's like that was, I was like, oh, it's 2/5, like the whole time, you know? So, and it's like, that has to be right. So,
and then Love of My Life.
Love of My Life is like a different, that's classical. Mm-hmm. You know, that wasn't even really like chord based at all, kind of is. But yeah, that one was way harder to learn than I thought it would be. Cause yeah, it has to be so correct.
Well, once again, you just mentioned like three separate types of songs. And that's one thing you mentioned earlier about Queen. It's like, I mean, Zeppelin did a bit of it and, you know, Beatles obviously, but they're so diverse. Like if you're just a rock player, you're not going to be good in this band. You know what I mean? And that's the same with those guys. Like, I don't know if any of them studied classical except for Freddie, but they just had that chemistry even for the drums and all that sort of stuff. There's so many different things. It's the same for the vocals, too.
Yeah, if you're just a rock singer, good luck.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
What's some of the harder songs to sing?
So he does a lot of songs that go high up into his chest voice that in my voice almost wants to be full head voice, but he somehow is able to belt his chest voice up that high. And I'm going, you're a guy. How are you singing this high? It's Late is probably the hardest song I've ever tried to sing.
Really?
Because the whole thing is done in this high chest voice and it's super belty and loud and it's fast and it's an amazing song. It's one of my favorite songs ever. And you can't change the key because the guitar solo is insane.
Hmm.
And I would never, ever wish that upon Emily to have to learn a different key.
Don't do that to me.
No. So I spent a lot of time. I'm a classically trained opera singer and a professionally trained pop and rock singer. So I spent a lot of time stretching out my chest voice and trying to get it to go high enough without putting extra weight or pressure. And then learning how to like back off but not switch. It's a dance while also running around the stage as a marathon and trying to entertain the crowd. And I'm like out of breath half the time going, oh my God, I can do this.
No, and that's what I'm saying. Like there's so many challenges to it it definitely, you have to have some balls to attempt it, and you have to be good. It's like I said to Shoot the Thrill last year in a different way. Like, you can't just go think you can play AC/DC because it's not easy. Mm-hmm. You think it is, but there's such a precision to it. And it's the same with you guys. Like, you can't boast as yourselves as a Queen band and not be, no pun intended, killer.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
When you guys have played shows, or use it mostly on your own, have you played with other bands? Have you played, like, what's some of your favorite gigs that you had?
Oh, gosh. Well, so we've had some interesting gigs. My favorite gig that I think we played was actually one that was at a comedy festival.
Mm-hmm.
It was for Colossal Clusterfest, which is Comedy Central's big festival that they do in San Francisco. And we played the soundtrack to Wayne's World with Alana Glazer and Abby from... what's that show? I'm so bad at remembering names. It's a huge, huge popular show. Broad City.
Oh, gotcha.
And they were Wayne and Garth, and it was like a gender bender kind of twist on the show. And they had 15 actors on stage cold reading.
Oh, wow.
And they went through the whole film just cold reading on stage with us playing the soundtrack. And it was at the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium to 7,000 people. And the whole time I was like, this is the strangest gig.
You're playing the soundtrack to Wayne's World?
Thought, yes. But they wanted somebody who could play Bohemian Rhapsody in its entirety.
Oh, gotcha.
And because we are the world's only all female, they jumped on it. They were like, oh, my God, we're already doing a gender bender for Wayne's World with Wayne and Garth, let's get the Killer Queens to come in and do the same kind of thing. So
it's perfect, right?
Yeah.
How about you, Emily? What's your favorite? Some of your favorite gigs you've played with the band? All of them?
Yeah, all of them. I really enjoyed, I think it was our most recent one we played right after the Atomic Punks. That was really cool to get to listen to them and then go up there. That one was fun. That was a really good crowd, too. Was that up in Folsom?
Yeah, that was the Folsom Live.
Do you do that quite a bit, play with other tribute bands?
Yes, we'll often play with other tribute bands. I prefer to play with original projects because I like being able to promote other original bands. But
sure.
It's also really awesome to get to see people tributing these incredible artists and doing it so well.
Atomic Punks are great, yeah. That's kind of the genesis of Steel Panther came from that, right?
Mm-hmm. I was so scared to go on stage right after them. Like, the whole time they're playing, I was like, no, I can't follow them up. I can't go on now.
But it, once again, a completely different vibe from you guys. It's not like you're going out there as a rat tribute or something. How about you, Olivia? Yeah. Some of your favorite gigs?
Oh, man. Well, I did just join. It's been kind of a whirlwind. But
okay.
We had a fun... I mean, I guess not just. Now it's been like 3 months. I'm like not new anymore. But, well, the whole tour we did in September was so fun. We had just like a straight week of going through. And we played in Vegas. That was really fun.
Oh, that's for Freddie Mercury's birthday.
That was really cool. Yeah. That was just a fun gig. And then... what else? I loved the Folsom Live, too. That was a really fun time.
That was a crowd that went as far as the eye could see.
Because everyone was so crazy.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Long Beach was really fun, too. We played
the Gas Lamp.
Oh, that's a famous place, right?
That crowd went crazy. We were opening for an Oingo Boingo tribute called Dead Man's Party.
Only have that in California.
So funny, yeah.
Right? You couldn't put that in Detroit.
Right, and they apparently sell out the Gas Lamp every time they play. So we were opening up to this like already ready to go crowd that was happy to be there, and they were so stoked on us. It was hard. Mm-hmm. It was hard for me to pull myself off the stage. Like, I kept being like, can we just do one more? Because the crowd was ready for it. They were screaming at the top of their lungs. Absolutely.
I just love the fact there's an Oingo Boingo tribute band. That's amazing.
Danny Elfman's one of my favorite artists.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what other tribute bands is there that you've played with? Is there any other unique ones? Because obviously Van Halen's probably got a lot of tribute bands.
Yeah. No, there's not a whole lot of like odd ones. Like we used to tour a lot with the David Bowie tribute.
What were they called?
They were called the Gene Genies.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, they were super fun. And they would do all the costume changes,
yeah.
I do 9 costume changes during the set, and originally the band wasn't doing costume changes, and then pretty soon the lead singer started doing changes, and I was like, oh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
I see.
You got to keep up with that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But it's been really fun. Right now we tend to book by ourselves, which is new. I'm used to playing with other projects, but all of a sudden it's just us.
Well, that's great. That shows that there's more, a desire to see you guys. Like I said, when the movie came out, I would see that, oh, this is perfect. Like for me, looking through all, because there's a lot of great, like I said, female tribute bands.
Yeah.
Like the Guns N' Roses, Paradise Kitty, and there was a Motley Crue one, and there's an Aerosmith one. And
There's Zeppelin. They're my favorite. They're up north.
Zeppelin. Zeppelin. That's cool.
Zeppelin. Yeah. What are the names Gretchen Menn. Gretchen Menn's actually on tour with Neely Brosh and you mentioned her earlier, Michael Jackson's guitar player.
Oh, Jennifer Batten.
Jennifer Batten. Gotcha. Yeah, they're doing shows together right now.
What other female tribute bands is it that you guys have played with or heard of?
The Iron Maidens is one of my favorites.
They're great.
I think that's pretty much how I found Emily, was that I follow the Iron Maidens and I follow Courtney, and then she ended up in Starbreakers, and then I saw Emily, and then it was like, oh, Emily.
Hello. Let's talk about the Starbreakers for a bit, because that's where we met on stage. It was a great time with Nita and with Jill. Mm-hmm. Tell us, how did that start up? Because had you guys been playing for a while when Jill passed away, or was it?
I think we had been maybe like a year and a half or 2 years. We all had really busy schedules, so it was really hard to, you know, get everyone together for a show. So I think we only ended up doing like 4 shows. But yeah, that was one of the most fun projects I've ever been involved in.
Yeah, we had a good time. What did we do? Crazy Train? Seek and Destroy?
At the Whiskey, what was it?
I don't know. I thought it was crazy. It was an Aussie song, I think, maybe.
I'm trying to even remember what songs he did.
Did you ever have any signs that Jill was because she was depressed, right? Depression.
Yeah. I was very, very close with Jill.
Were you?
So that was very, very hard, rough.
Such a shock.
Yeah. It was very shocking. Like, I talked to her like every day, and I didn't even.
Because that's what they say when people have, because it was depression, right? Suicide from depression.
Yeah.
And you never noticed that, right? Because I used to talk about her jewelry all the time. She's making all this kind of cool jewelry and stuff. And then I didn't know her like you did, but still.
Yeah. Very, very. I have a little like jewelry box that I have like collected all the jewelry she made me.
Oh, yeah.
When I knew her, because we both loved unicorns. Uh-huh. So she would always, whenever I'd go over there and she would dye my hair for me, she'd have a new unicorn jewelry or a wolf, and she'd always like give it to me or put it like on my car, like mirror.
She was a great singer.
Yeah, she was. Her, our first show, 45 minutes, she had, I think it was like a 5-octave range in that 45 minutes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Because I met her through the Golden Gods, the award show, she was there. And then I checked out Huntress. And then obviously at that gig, the Whiskey gig too, it's like, wow, she was a really good singer, good front woman, very, very cool person. So
yeah,
shout out to Jill. And you had to be blonde for that gig?
Yeah.
Was that the gimmick that everyone has to be a blonde?
Yeah. Everyone was blonde for that. It was fun.
How do you pick out the songs that you guys play when you mentioned doing 3-hour sets? And you mentioned some really obscure tunes.
Yes.
Are you trying to play all the hits plus others? Are you trying to mix it up? Or,
well, so we have to play all 18 hits pretty much every time we perform.
Is that what it is? 18?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The audience wants to hear those songs. And it's interesting, is sometimes the audience doesn't realize that that's a Queen song. Mm. So you'll see the audience go, oh, this is Queen? You know, I thought Stone Cold Crazy was Metallica. Mm-hmm. I thought Crazy Little Thing Called Love was Elvis. Like, what?
Right. Yeah.
So, and then the deep cuts is like, you know, sometimes I'll put out a poll and be like, what do you guys think? These songs? who wants what one? And like Cool Cat came up, and that wasn't one that I had really listened to in a long time. And I was like, oh, how does that even go? And as soon as I heard it, I went, this is a song that would be popular today.
Mm. It's killing. I love that song.
Awesome. And the audience doesn't know it at all. They have no idea. They've never heard it before. So it's really fun to get to show them some new songs.
Well, that's what I mean. Like when you go to see, you know, a Queen band, you want to hear all the hits and you have to play them. But do they tolerate and respond to the obscure tunes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Queen's they're amazing songwriters. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like they could even write a bad song. Although there is debate over, one of my favorite songs is Body Language.
I was going to say Hot Space. The Hot Space album.
And so many Queen fans are like, screw that album. That's so awful.
I love that song, Body Language.
Me too.
When I was a kid, it was a big hit on radio in Canada.
Nice.
Yeah. Sexy.
Yeah. I so badly want to perform that. Body. It has like no, there's nothing to it pretty much. It's just bass and
really
a drum track.
Bad, yeah. But it's great. Yeah. It's Body. Sexy. Mm-hmm.
Sexy buddy.
that's it.
Yeah.
What are some of the more obscure ones that you do besides the couple that you mentioned?
Oh gosh, what else are we doing right now?
That's not that obscure, though.
Play the Game's Save not me. Super obscure.
Play the Game? Yeah,
that's Save Me's a good one.
Do you guys do, like, Dragon Attack?
Yes. Mm. We do Dragon Attack. We do it in a medley with Bicycle Race, I'm in Love with My Car, and Flash.
God, a Flash is a good one.
Yeah. We do a lot of short little blips of songs, too, where I'll be like, I really want to include this one, but we don't have to do the whole thing. Let's just do a little bit of it.
Which is what Queen does now. I remember when I saw their set list, it's like 33 songs. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's going to be the longest concert ever.
Yeah.
But then they just do, like, you know, the opening riff to Seven Seas of Rye and then go into something else or whatever it may be, right?
Totally.
We
love Seven Seas of Rye and Keep Yourself Alive.
I'm just kidding. That one was so hard to play.
Is that a hard one?
Yeah. That one took me so long. But it's really like, you just have to figure it out. There's a trick to it.
So. Mm-hmm. Is there a certain pattern to their songwriting?
No.
Is that what you mean? Or
well, they do have some patterns. Like, I was noticing that in some of the less jazzy, or like they're half jazzy, half not. Like, they'll go to like the D minor, A minor. They have some like progression pattern.
You guys are such musos.
Not.
You throw legato at me, and you're throwing D minor patterns and all this sort of stuff. But I mean, yeah, like I said, once again, you have to be because it's Queen, right?
It makes you a stronger player. I mean, that's my favorite part of having this tribute, is that, like, it gave me the opportunity to tour with Queensryche. I didn't think that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's given me the opportunity to become a stronger singer. It makes me a stronger musician because I also am, in some times, the musical director if we don't have somebody else who's taking that role at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so suddenly I'm going, okay, I actually have to know how this song goes, not just from a lyrical standpoint.
Right. So tell us, you mentioned you went on an actual tour, like a week-long tour. Is this like, were you guys piling in a van, or how did you get around?
No, we were flying.
Oh, wow. Fancy pantses.
Hot shots. We don't do vans.
Oh, my goodness.
We try not to do vans. Yeah. But the flights are brutal, too. I mean, you're getting into the hotel at 2 or 3 in the morning, and then you have to be back in the lobby at 5 a.m., and it's like, I didn't sleep at all.
Something to be said about van traveling, bus traveling. You know, if you do a short tour of van and rooms, that's almost preferable to flights and rooms, because the airport's so crazy. You know, check in, check out, grab your bag, lose your bag, find this, do that, check in thing, you know, go through security, et cetera, et cetera.
That's why I'm just like booking them on private jets using JetSuiteX. Like, we're just going to skip TSA. We don't need that.
Yeah, just private jets, yeah. You got that killer Queen money now, so you're all
it's actually less expensive. I shouldn't be marketing this because it's going
to
go up in price. But
what is it?
JetSuiteX. They go by JSX now. And it's private jets that only hold 30 people, and you book flights, and it's just to certain cities. But like, the next show that we have is a corporate event, and I was looking at flights, and it was more expensive to send them on Alaska, which is great for musicians. Alaska Airlines is amazing for musicians. They take really good care of the instruments.
Do they let you carry your instruments on, or what do you mean? Mm-hmm. You have to check them underneath? Or?
Do you want to tell them the story of Alaska?
I will talk about Alaska Airlines all day. I love Alaska. I will be their spokesperson. They take such great care of the instruments. They let you bring it on with you, like, as carry-on, no problem. They give you like a fragile tag for it. Multiple times I've had them ask me what my guitar's name is. Like, they carry it down for you, like down to the plane, so you don't have to even like deal with it. I love Alaska. I will talk about them all day.
Which, and for people that don't understand, like, this is a big thing. Like, I know when we tour, especially in Europe, where there's a lot of fly dates, you have to bring your guitar with you on the plane. And a lot of times they will give you hassle or make you so ridiculous, made us buy an extra seat for the freaking guitar.
What?
Yeah, shitty airline in like Denmark or wherever we were last year. And it's like, are you kidding? Like, you cannot take it on the plane. You must buy another ticket. It's like, dude, come on, man. Like, what are you talking about? There's 50 people on the plane. It holds 200. No one's going to care.
That's terrifying.
Well, you know, but that's what I mean. So when you're talking about Alaska Airlines allowing you to do that, that's...
I've literally never had one negative experience with Alaska.
There you go, spokeswoman, right there, Amin Radovich. Now, tell me more about this JSX thing. Why am I just hearing about this for the first time? I've been traveling for 29 years. I've never heard
new-ish.
This.
It's newish. I think they've only been around for 3 years. So it's not brand new, but it's still pretty
new.
So
it's a private jet, but there's other people on it.
Yes. So it's basically like Uber for flying. So it's people who own private jets who fly on their own, and then they are able now to sell tickets to their planes. And then they fly you to certain cities. And so
I'm going to look into this. I'm super jelly right now.
It's awesome. I'm flying with them on Friday.
Wow. So there you go. So you really were flying private jets. Where are you kind of looking to take the band? We talked to you earlier about Australia. Is that something you're going to try and
absolutely. Make happen? I mean, my dream when I started this project 7 years ago was to be able to tour internationally on the project. I really wanted to be able to get enough eyes on the band so that my own personal career could even have a chance, because it's very hard to get anywhere in music these days. It's become, you know, the barrier of entry is so low. Anybody can make music these days, which is great and also terrible.
Right. So you can put up anything on Spotify or whatever it is.
Yes, so it's an ocean of people for it, right? Screaming, look at me, and nobody's really paying attention. Yeah. I teach voice lessons as my day job, and my students went from like knowing albums, band names, everything about the project to, I just like this song. And I like this other song, and I don't know who sings it, but I like this song. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, this is terrifying. You don't even know the artist you're listening to, and you don't care at all.
Right.
So I would love to have the Killer Queens play Japan. I would love to have them in Australia. I'd love to have them in the UK, all of Europe. China would be amazing if we could get out there, although I heard some interesting things about touring China, so let's work on that.
But the thing is, though, like I said, I mean, the fact that you're all female is a huge plus. Mm-hmm. Like, I would take you guys over a male band just because it's I did take you over a male band because it's such a cool concept. You know what I mean? Like I said, same thing with the Shoot to Thrill Girls. It's like, this is fucking killer, man. No pun intended. So when you're talking about Australia, and I mentioned that I saw Paradise Kitty over there. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of a market. I think you guys would do great there.
Yeah, we're actually, after this lovely podcast with you, we're going to be doing an interview for an Australian television show.
Ah, right.
So, yes, and you've agreed to be our interviewee.
That's right. Yes, exactly.
So I'm excited to have that happen and hopefully get more attention on the project out there. I changed my attitude towards how to market the project, and I started marketing in areas that we've never played. Mm-hmm. And normally I would market, we have a show at this date, at this place, come to it. And I would just market the shows. And now I'm going, no, you know what? I'm just going to blanket statement market across all these different areas and see if anybody then hits us up and goes, oh, I just heard about you. This sounds so cool.
Right. Just see what happens. That's why it's good to be on the cruise, because every week or every twice a week, I'm mentioning your name on the podcast. People see it and there'll be, 2,200 people that are captive audience to check you out, and the word gets around.
Yes.
You know, and that's kind of how you do it nowadays. Because like you mentioned, it's all about touring. Mm-hmm. There is no more record sales. Records are just basically a souvenir for the tour. Yeah. You know, Queen's music is a souvenir for your tour.
I had a feeling that things weren't going very well in the music world when System of a Down created an album that said, steal this album. And it was just a white sheet, and it wrote in Sharpie, steal this album.
Yeah.
And I was like, uh-oh, this isn't a good sign. And I was still very young at that point. I was barely in high school looking at that going,
Do you think, I was just thinking about this, do you think that it, obviously this is not a bad thing because it's Queen and you want them to last forever. Do you think it hurts your draw a bit when Queen's out there touring this summer? Was that a problem?
No, actually, it's interesting. So Queen will come through the area and I'll go to their show and I'll hand out flyers for our band because target audience. And a lot of times they'll go, oh, this is cool, I want to see this. And we'll get people who come to the show and go, you know, I think you guys are better than what they're doing with Adam Lambert. And I'm going, shut up. There's no way. You
it's
can't
still
say
good
that.
It's so good to hear, though.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing to hear those things.
Let's just as we wind down here, tell me a little bit more about when you went to London and the red carpet and all that stuff. How was it talking with Roger and Brian? Did you have a conversation with them?
So, yes and no. They were very busy with interviews. Mm. So Roger Taylor is not very approachable. Mm. He is very much the typical rock star.
Yeah, I've heard
he's
that.
Like,
English
hi,
rock
yes,
star.
Nice to meet you. Okay, yeah, whatever. Yeah. You know?
Right.
And the darkness was there because his son plays drums with them, and they were the same thing. I went to go say hi to them, and they were like, what do you want? And I was like, I love you. Why?
You're so English.
I know.
Right.
But I actually got a great experience with, because we had played in San Francisco, I'd mentioned to the guys when I met them, Rami Malek and Gwilym Lee, that I'm going to be at the event in London. And as soon as I arrived, Gwilym Lee, who plays Brian May in the film, sees me and comes running over and is like, Nina, oh my God, you're here. And I'm like, you remember me. Oh my God.
That's cool.
Because he's gorgeous. He's the most beautiful man I've ever seen in my life. Brian May's also very gorgeous. Yeah. They look like twins.
Yeah.
And he very friendly and wanted to introduce me to everybody. So he grabs me and walks me around and starts just introducing me to everyone. And it was very short, very quick, but he kept going on, you know, this is Nina, the lead singer of the world's only all-female tribute to Queen. Isn't that so cool? I saw them play in San Francisco. They were amazing. And I didn't have to say anything. I just got to stand there and smile and wave and be like, this is awesome.
Mm.
And so he introduced me to Brian May. And I froze because that's the first thing he says. This is Nina, the lead singer of the world's only all-female tribute to Queen. And I went, oh, God, he knows. Okay, now he knows. Oh, my God, I hope he's okay with this. And he was very sweet. He's like, oh, that's lovely, darling. You know,
it's lovely.
And Gwilym just kept going on about how great we were. And I literally couldn't say one word. I just stood there. I didn't get any photos with Brian or Roger or anything. I was so just
you don't
like,
know what to do, right?
Yeah. How am I here right now? Is this a dream? This isn't happening. And of course, he gets whisked away to an interview. And then I'm going, did anyone get that on video? Did anyone take a picture? No one's going to believe me.
In this day and age when everybody films everything.
Right.
And takes pictures of everything. Like even stuff you get in trouble for.
Mm-hmm.
I did Lemmy's 70th birthday party at the Whiskey. Listen to this lineup. We did Beer Drinkers and Hellraisers. It was me, Charlie, and Scott from Anthrax, Rob from Metallica, Ugly Kid Joe, what's his cat's name, Whitfield Crane, and freaking Slash.
Wow.
And we did this killer version of Beer Drinkers and Hellraisers. Me and Whit changed up the vocals, and they did like a 32-bar solo of just Slash with this rhythm. Nobody filmed it. I have one 6-second thing that this friend of mine in the crowd, like, why didn't you film the whole thing?
Wow.
Well, I got this six, that's it, 6 seconds. You shouldn't have filmed anything. Like, and then of course I'm online, somebody must have filmed it. It's the Whiskey, there's probably camera, nothing.
Oh,
if anybody's listening, that was at Lemmy's 70th birthday party and you have this, I need to see it, please, right? But that's the thing. And of course you didn't get any.
No, I got a picture with Gwilym Lee.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. Olivia, I was going to ask you, as a keyboard player, this is something I never thought, because we don't have keyboards in our band. Mm-hmm. How do you carry your rig around, like your actual keyboard?
Well, so right now I have this really small Nord, like the smaller Electro. So it's actually not bad. It's like smaller than a guitar.
Mm.
I think I'm going to start using Main Stage, which has like, you know, all the patches and like, and if that, you know, once I do that, I'll be able to like just show up with a laptop if there's a backline keyboard.
Oh, wow. So you might have to get that in your backline then. You can get that, like drums.
And I have to get to a level where I'm like can play with it live. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it has to be smooth. So, but for right now, like even just carrying around, I have like the smaller Nord. It's like, you know, it's not bad.
Is it hard doing fly dates where you have backline different amps every night and that sort of stuff, Emily?
Yes.
Yes.
We're supposed to get the same amp each time, but
you're supposed to.
It kind of just depends. So that's always a giant, like, that stresses me out so bad when I get there and I see just, like, some crappy amp, and I'm like, okay.
Because how good are you, right? Because it's just an amp and a guitar, but still, it has to be a good amp.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, once again, for the music that you're playing. I was going to ask you the last couple questions here. Do you travel with a sound front of house person?
We don't currently travel with a sound guy, but we are training one right now. So he's coming to our shows and kind of feeling out how we run our sets. But a lot of the venues are union-based, and so sometimes they won't let us touch anything. And we can't fly with a full board. I saw that you do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
We played a gig in Orlando about 6 years ago, and it was with a house sound guy. It was shit. It was the worst. I remember a lot of the guys, the three of the guys from Alter Bridge were there, and it's like, well, there goes the chance of ever opening for them, because that was the shits. It sounded terrible.
Uh-oh.
And Rich and I were saying, we're never, ever playing another show without our guy, our front of house. Because especially, once again, with Queen music, if you have someone like, listen, God bless the house guys, but a lot of them really don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And there's so much in your show. Yeah.
I have a section in a writer that is just notes for the sound guy. And it's literally like, please read this.
Yeah.
And I need the volumes on the mics to be exactly in this order. Yeah. And you need to make sure that during these songs that the mics are done in this order. And like,
and every show is, of course, they do it.
No.
No.
That's why we're training a sound guy. Yeah. And Matt's amazing because he not only is great at running front of house, but he's also a producer and he's a guitar player and he's a drummer and he basically plays every instrument. He's produced several albums on his own. He also sings, and he's probably the sweetest guy you'll ever meet. So,
but you have to have that. Even if it costs a little bit extra with another plane ticket or whatever, it's worth it.
Yep.
Because if you don't come out of it sounding great, people notice that. Even if they're not musicians, they notice, like, I just didn't sound good. The vocals weren't good, or it was too sludge muddy, and you know, you got to have that, especially when you start playing bigger places.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And even like if we play everything perfectly and the sound's not right, there's nothing we can do.
Yeah. Doesn't matter, like, exactly. If the sound is perfect and you don't play it perfectly, but people still dig it because the sound is better, then that's worth it too, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Last question for you. Actually, two last questions. Have you guys ever been on a cruise before?
I have not.
Yes.
Yes, you have? Did you play on a cruise?
I played on the Monsters of Rock cruise.
Oh, cool.
With Paradise Kitty, actually.
Oh, wow. You're just with everybody.
I actually played in Shoot to Thrill, too.
You did?
Yeah.
No kidding. Because you're from North Carolina,
That was my very first band I was ever in was Shoot to Thrill.
You're kidding me. What were you playing in that?
Bass.
Nice. Yeah. Wow, you never mentioned that. Your first band ever. Was it hard being an AC/DC band?
No, the bass was pretty easy for that.
You really got to lock in with the drums, though.
Yeah, it wasn't like as serious as like the Killer Queens are. Mm. So it was more just like everyone was just kind of having fun. Yeah, you know what I mean? So
was it the same drummer that's in the band now?
I have no. Since I moved away from North Carolina, I don't really.
She was a killer drummer. If it was the same girl, she was like just badass.
What was her name?
I don't recall. I don't recall.
I don't think they've had the same people since I moved from North Carolina.
Gotcha. What you haven't been on a cruise?
Nope.
And you haven't been on a cruise. Oh, you guys have so much fun.
First time experience.
It's a blast. You're going to have so much fun. You guys are going to get over huge. And then you can have some drinks or just there's so much stuff to do. It's a nonstop party. So
cool. We're
looking forward to having you. Last question for you. What is your favorite song to play? And what's the hardest song to play?
Ooh. All right. Let's start with Emily.
I think the most fun one for me is maybe Keep Yourself Alive. And that one's so crazy too, like the format of that song.
Yeah.
It's just all over the place. So that's
weirdest
a really
beginning
fun.
Ever too. Like you gotta really nail that beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've got it, our drummer and I have got it locked down.
Good.
We practiced that one a lot.
Yeah. And what's the hardest to play?
The hardest to play. This is actually going to sound stupid because this is not a hard song, but Cool Cat. I get so bored during that that I'll like fall asleep and then be like, oh my God, where are we?
Got to pay attention to those ones, right?
When they're hard, it's easier for me to focus because then I'm like, I know what
attention.
I'm doing. Yeah. I'm like on it. But when it's just like doing like same two chords for a long time, I'm just like,
oh. How about you, Olivia?
I really like You're My Best Friend, just because I love the clav. It's fun to play clav, like the clav sound.
Yeah.
good old-fashioned Loverboy is fun. I think hardest, also kind of mentally, is Bohemian Rhapsody, just because you have to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mentally, I'll be like, part of my brain is like, thinking about other things. I'm like, you can only think about getting this part right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, stop.
You have to get that right.
But yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably.
How about you, Nina?
So the funnest song to perform is Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
Mm.
It's a dance song. Everybody gets like way into it right away. We always win the audience over at that point. If they're like not sure they want to dance, then that song comes on. They're like, oh, okay, I'll dance for this one.
Right.
The hardest song for me is Keep Yourself Alive because that one has so many words.
Wow, good point.
And they don't repeat in the way you'd expect them to. Like anytime he starts to repeat a lyric, I'm like, oh, here we go. He changes one word.
Right.
I'm like,
That's
why?
Super. I hate that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that.
And it's so fast. I always feel like I'm practically rapping.
Mm.
I mean, Stone Cold Crazy is basically a rap, and it's way easier.
Yeah. I did a tribute, or like, what was it called? Metal Allegiance last year at NAMM, and we did Stone Cold Crazy. And that's you just sing it like James Hetfield. It's not hard at all.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I love the Metallica version where I'm like trying to convince our drummer to play the Metallica drums on it because I like the stops that they have. And
have you guys ever seen the Freddie Mercury tribute concert from 92 at Wembley Stadium?
Yes.
Did you ever watch Extreme? Go watch it. They do an amazing, about a 20-minute medley of Queen. And it's really, really good. Because that band, Gary is great, and Nuno is just a killer.
Wow.
It's really...
I love Nuno. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, just Google Extreme Freddie Mercury tribute, and it'll blow your fucking mind. It's really, really good. I just watched it the other day for first time in a few years, and it's like they just really nailed it. They're the closest band to Queen on that whole tribute stage.
Mm.
And it's worth checking
out
for sure.
Yeah. I feel like I have to have seen it because I've watched that whole thing as much as...
Yeah, they do. It's like Radio Gaga's in there and another one. It's The Dust and Bohemian Rhapsody and Keep Yourself Alive. And
all the hits.
One, it's another. But it's just the way they put it together is really, really cool.
So. Awesome. Maybe we can take some notes for when we have to do short sets.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And they're like, we don't know who you are. You only get 30 minutes. I'm like, 30
well,
minutes
Queen did the
Queen?
Best. Queen did the best gig of all time in 20 minutes.
Yeah. That is very true.
Right?
That I mean, is very true.
I still say to this day that Queen at Live Aid is the best gig of all time.
Yes, you know, I agree with that.
Knowing the history behind it and all the stuff, they just murdered it. So good. Mm-hmm. Any aspiring band, when you're like, we actually were doing the Uproar Festival a couple of years ago, where we got 30 minutes. And I was like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do Queen at Live Aid. We're going out there. We'll play song after song. Boom, boom, boom. Body blow, body punch in the face. And see you later, buddy.
Yeah. That's how you do it.
That's how you do it. We will see you guys on the Jericho Cruise. It's going to be exciting.
Yes, we can't wait. Yeah, thank you so much.
Do you take requests?
Oh, well, it depends.
Crazy little thing on my
We got that.
You got that. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.